The following Noble Path talk is part of an informal series offered to Sangha members for those who've been practicing at the Zen Center of New York City, Fire Lotus Temple. Each Sangha member shares their experience of how they came to find the Dharma and how their practice has been developing. We hope you enjoy the diversity of voices and experiences. Thank you for listening.
My name is Dan Fu, and as Joshin introduced me, I had been practicing for a while now in the mountains and rivers order. That is not the first talk that I gave, but I gave a lot of my past in previous one. So I will start a little bit. I will not go over all the details of all that, what brought me to the path. But I will go back to when I stepped in. My pronouns are she and her, and I am delighted to be with you today. Hojin is at the monastery for a long week. Long, maybe not long for her, I don't know. But for a week long, a week of sitting called Seshin. And I will go through my own experience of my first session a little later. So I was in vacation in France, like I did every year, and something was kind of not very stable in my own life. And a friend of mine in the south of France, where I lived for years and years, a decade in the past, was involved with Zen. And I saw her. I mean, I knew her from before. We had been living in community and all that. And I knew that she had been practicing Zen for 5 years already. And I could feel when I met her after that time, a lot of changes. Not obvious things, but just her way of being with people and really communicating, contacting people was so soft and so generous in a lot of ways. And, I mean, she was not showing off. She was like that. It was a kind of natural way of being for her now. And I said, I want to be like that. And I asked her, because she was part of a group. I asked her, could I join you? So it was in Antibes, which is, I mean, I have to say that the setting was just perfect. And so it was in Antibes, but she gave me beginning instructions, in fact, in her own house. And I took that in, and she said, do you think that you are ready to come and sit with us tonight? Yeah, I'm ready. And I went. And I sat. I had been reading a little bit before about Zen and all that, but I forgot everything on the spot. And I sat. Here, you know, you come and you are in your street clothes. If you are not a student, you have no robe. But there, they put me on a robe right away. A black robe, I loved it. You know, I'm a black lady. So I put the robe and started to sit. And it was just amazing. Afterwards, when I stepped out of that sitting meditation, 2 periods, everything looked so luminous. I mean, yeah, it was the south of France, and it was the summer, but everything was crisp and all that. And I know it was the same before, I sat, but I know that I was perceiving in a different way. So it was good. So I went back to where I was in Cannes and all that. Then on the Sunday, it was a potluck. So I could meet, because that evening I just saw my friend, more or less, right? We were all facing the wall. I was in a corner, I remember. And I remember that I was looking just like that. You know, I did not receive the instructions of looking down and gazing at the ground. And I was looking like that. And somebody came with a kyosaku. And just in front of my eyes did that little move like that. And my eyes were down. I mean, it was just so, that was my contact. That was so subtle. And at the same time, I did not see anyone. But for the potluck, I could meet the group of people. And the teacher was that was another lineage than ours. That was Deshimaru, the name of the teacher of that lineage in France at that time. And the teacher just looks at me and said, "Where are you from?" That was not a Zen question. That was just a geographical question. So I could answer like that. I was not, So I said I was passing by. I lived in New York. And, "Oh, you're living in New York. I know New York. I went several summers in Fire Island." So it sets you like that, right? So, "Ooh, never went there, but yeah." So, and she said, "You know, if you want to continue," because I said that it was my first time sitting with a group and all that. She said, "If you want to continue, go when you go back home, just look for a teacher and a sangha." Teacher, I understood, because I read somewhere that when you are ready, the teacher appears. So I was saying that. But the sangha, what is the sangha? And this is what I want to talk about today. Because I did not know. First of all, when I stepped in that Zen training or Zen meditation, I really thought that Zen was its own thing. And that I did not at the time even put together Zen Buddhism. So, Sangha, said like that, was puzzling to me. What is a Sangha? So, I will say what it is. Definition. When I was back, I'm sorry, a little thing on my notes here, don't want to miss anything. When I came back to New York, I looked, and that's also to tell you how long ago it was. Probably a lot of you were not even born. I looked at the yellow pages. That's what our way to do things. And do the walking for you. So I looked at those and came two things. A Zen center near Hunter College. I will block black on names right now. And Zen Center of New York City on 23rd Street. And I stepped in that center on Hunter, near Hunter College, 67th Street. And I came in like that, and I don't know why, but I stepped in and I stepped out. just like that. I mean, it just it did that to me. I did not obey anything. I mean, yes, I obeyed the step back, but I will not say anything against or whatever. That was just my state of mind. I enter, I left. I think that it was no one, first of all, to acknowledge my presence. And it was a sign like that, $10. I mean, I took it that way, $10. So it did not fit me. So I went back and was left the Zen Center of New York City, 23rd Street, above TechServe or something like that. So it was on the 10th floor. So I went there. But nobody was there. And it was not, I mean, you have to go back to then, no internet, no nothing. They did not have a phone to call. That was just nothing. So I just dropped in like that during the day. And it was a little box at the entrance of the room, really, that was a room, to leave messages inside. So I left a message saying, can you call me back? Blah, blah, blah. I gave all my name and all that. And I put that in the box and left and waited. And the teacher appears when you are ready. I was ready and I was waiting for the teacher to appear. And the teacher did not appear, but a long time after that, where I received a newsletter preparing people for Ango. So it was there in the spring of 1998. So I got that letter, that things, and I was really, shaky. I mean, what I am getting into. So they contacted me, and they offered me to come for a Sunday service like you all started to do, and receive beginning instructions. Now, no one, just like you who started today, no teachers was there because everybody was in Ango opening. No teacher, no one. It was no, and we had, I think the Dharma talk, but that was great, was given by Daido Roshi on screen, on television. That was that. And I received very borderline instruction. So I started to think, and this was my first encounter with the Sangha. All what I will say today, more or less, I mean, is our Sangha. The Mountains and Rivers Order Sangha, because this is the one I stepped in and stayed. I did not look around somewhere else. I knew somehow that it was the place. So to go back to Sangha, what is the Sangha? So as a definition, like you probably all know by now, or maybe ignorant like I was the first time I stepped in, the Sangha is the community of practitioners. At the origin, that was with the Buddha, that was mainly men who joined the Sangha, ordained people, men. Then after that, women joined. And lay people were joining also more and more. The lay practitioners, if I understand well, were more involved in merits, getting merits in order to create a good karma. I don't know, I don't want to say things which are not, you know, I feel like fact-checked, you know. Tenfu, that was not very, maybe not. So anyway, That's how I understand that. That lay people join progressively, right? And were more giving the food for the mendicants, were more involved in that way, or for people in power to create temples or to give some money and all that. That was really to build some merit, but not really to practice. The practitioners were probably all monastics. I mean, we hear so many stories, and I think they are so beautiful, of just people listening. I mean, imagine a lot of people listening to the words of the Buddha, right? And being suddenly converted, leaving home. I follow that person. I mean, just suddenly, just hearing it and entering the stream and never coming back, right? So obviously women wanted to join also and all that. So many men were going to follow the Buddha. Then the woman, and here we are. So that was there. Now Buddhism traveled west a lot. And Zen Buddhism, and this is what I will focus on, came in the States by the Japanese teachers. I mean, even in France, that was Japanese teachers coming in and starting to build a sangha composed of monasteries and lay practitioners, because we hear the lay practice had been starting to full bloom, really. And people wanted, that was not then only for the merits. That was also to cultivate that wisdom that we all have and to be trained to do that. So all the, in the States became sangha, monasteries and the lay practitioners. At one point, I mean, some centers remained only lay, but here in our case, this is the monastics at the monastery and the lay people. And here in New York, by now, this is mainly a lay center. In relationship, total relationship, following the same training than the monastery, but we are more lay center, and we are proving that today, since no monastic is here. Hojin is not here. Hojin is the only resident monastic at the temple now. It had not been like that all the time, but this is the state of this sangha right now. And we are more involved in for the lay practice, right? So now I will read. That's a long introduction, and I will probably repeat myself again, but you have to bear with me. I will often, during that talk, quote Thich Nhat Hanh. He was a Vietnamese monk who established a sangha in the West and in France to start with. So coming from Vietnam during the Vietnam War, he was in exile and starting the sangha, the Plum Village in France, in the Dordogne region, which is southwest. And I mention him very often because his sangha was also composed of lay people, but mainly monastics, ordained nuns and monks. And the sangha grew and grew, and he just transmitted to other people, and it's a Plum Village sangha all over the world. And his sangha, to my eyes, resembles pretty much in the West, the Sangha, the Indian on the field Sangha that the Buddha started on his time. So, so Thich Nhat Hanh, taking his voice. A Sangha is a community of friends, noble friends, I will add, practicing the Dharma together in order to bring about and to maintain awareness. The essence of a Sangha is awareness, understanding, acceptance, harmony, and love. When you find these elements present in a community, you know that you have the good fortune of being in a real Sangha. This is beautiful, but I have to say it was not my experience. I mean, I believed that, but it was not that. As I said, first of all, I received very succinct beginning instructions. The Sangha then was kind of new, we will say, even if it was in the 90s and all that. The monastery was founded completely in 1980, so that was still pretty much a new Sangha. I mean, I don't know. I think that here we are really welcoming people. We are not fearing hugs and things like that. You belong. You enter and you belong. Then, I'm not sure it was that, or at least I did not perceive that way. I'm sure that the heart was there. It was not expressed exactly that. So I did not feel that comfortable. No. But it was due to many things, not all the way I was welcomed. I was welcomed, I know that. But at the same time, I did not feel what Thich Nhat Hanh calls love. I felt a lot of respect. I felt a lot of things that way. I was not, but I did not feel that love. Anyway, I sat, and there also, after periods of sitting, my perception of the world after that was kind of clearer, a little more luminous, a little more so, sitting is good. And I found a Sangha, like that person was telling me when I was in France, and I was ready to give it a chance because I felt secure enough. And when you enter, I don't know about you, but when you are from another culture altogether, because it is another culture, when you step in another one like that, you are timid. My English, which is not perfect, was far from being what it is now. And I felt, shy. And what was that Zen stuff, you know? Did they read my mind? Did they know everything that I was thinking and things like that? Worry about all that. So, but I gave it more chances and I came back. And the teacher came back from Ango and Sechin and all that. And at that time, that was Myo Thai Sensei, who was the first abbess of this temple and he went her own way at one point. And she gave a talk. And I don't know, I mean, people listening to the Buddha, they followed the Buddha, they left home. I was not ready to leave home, but I heard Myo Thai Sensei, and I was converted. I mean, just right. I knew that I was in the right place, and I knew that I was ready to listen more of her. And I knew I was hooked, no doubt about that. And I started to come more regularly, but it was not, you know, I mean, when you start to practice with people, and I don't know about you, but for me, the Sangha, as I said, I did not know what it was, and I was really self-centered. I was really self-centered for my practice, right? And it was my practice, that was my cushion, that was my mind, that was my. And I did not get yet, you know, what else it was, right? I mean, I was pretty new to the whole thing. So listening to Miyotai made me come back again and again and again. Thich Nhat Hanh again. Because I have to say that all the, I will not say cold, because that's not the word, but all what I felt, which was not love and, you know, hugging me, welcoming, that was my mind. I mean, you know, that was just a lot was from here. You know, my timidity, my insecurity, my not knowing what Zen was, and all that, and trying to figure out. So anyway, again, Thich Nhat Hanh to bring me back to that. Practitioners gather to meditate, to share their joys and difficulties, don't forget the difficulties, and to encourage each other on the path of practice. Meeting regularly with others to sit and share together is a precious way to cultivate our understanding and compassion, and to re-establish our deep connection with others. This is Sangha. This is Sangha, and this is the Sangha that I did not see then, and that more and more I see now. Reestablish our deep connection with each other. I did not feel it, as I said, right away, but I feel it more and more. It was a desire to belong in me, despite the culture different. I mean, I was kind of shocked when I came. I mean, I came here for music, for rock and roll, for Patti Smith, that was our time together, for Leonard Cohen. I came here for all those people and was not completely ready for the rest of the American culture, I will say. Even if in France we started to lean toward that materialism and all that. But suddenly, you know, I knew that belonging to something a little bit different and deeper and spiritual, let's put it that way. So that reestablishing a connection with each other, I mean, you cannot do it so much outside of a community, right? So I really felt at that moment, and more, as I said, it's really evolving, the belonging to a lot of people in the same search somehow to have a meaningful life, to deal with the difficulty. I did not know then, but I will go through that after, the difficulties. And the joys, I say, Thich Nhat Hanh, but all that was not like, you know, at the beginning that was just coming to me in full force. I had to discover somehow all those qualities of the Sangha. Shogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, in his book, The Heart of the Buddha, on taking refuge in the Sangha, and I will go to that, said, you belong to a tradition of loneliness where people work together. Taking, just like Thich Nhat Hanh was saying, practicing together. So Trungpa was saying that in a book and talking about taking refuge in the Sangha. So maybe some of you participated already in the in Fusatsu, but in Buddhism, we relate to the three treasures, the Buddha treasure, the Dharma treasure, and the Sangha treasure. The Sangha is a treasure, and we take refuge in that treasure. So in Fusatsu, which is a ceremony of renewal of vows, which is good for everyone, even if you did not receive the precepts and receive the 10 precepts and all that, you can renew. We all can renew our vows. And during this ceremony, we chant, you know, taking refuge in the Buddha, and taking refuge in the Sangha. And we bow at the same time. And we say, being one with the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. So here also gives you the tone of what is a Sangha. It's honorable for its harmony. A little further, I say, the chant say, being one with the Sangha, with all sentient beings, lead the people, let harmony pervade everywhere. And here we are here, at that moment, making a full prostration, pervade everywhere. And each time, I don't want to be teary right now, but I could really. It's each time that comes and we are down, you know, in prostration, touching the ground, I feel how we can expand, and pervade everywhere. So it's just, it is so beautiful. And this is here when you utter those words that you can feel the power as a Sangha that we have. Because we have, as a Sangha and part of a Sangha, a power to just lead the people and to spread that, what we touch, what we experience when we are meditating together, practicing together, and working together. So that's here, taking refuge. So what does that mean to take refuge also, right? Usually you want to take refuge because you want to be safe from somewhere, right? And here, let's add to it, to the taking refuge, the trust that comes with it. You are part of a Sangha, honorable for its harmony, and you are part of it, right? So you know that you have to embody that harmony that we are talking about. So, as we said, you know, practice sharing your joys and difficulties, and I will go that. So you are here to just, you know, we are all here to just I will say, maybe show an example somewhere. You know, we learn how to be with our joys and our difficulties. So maybe you can, we can know at the same time that it's a lot of difficulties in the world. We are not the other. So maybe it will give you a little more compassion, maybe to see that you are not the only one having difficulties. And it's a lot of difficulties. So here we are making a kind of a union of people like-minded who really want harmony, harmony in the world. Right? I will go back to that at one point because I have a quote. Is it now? Yeah, that's a quote from Shugen Roshi about Sangha. And he says, I have long felt that the practice of the Sangha treasure is the Buddha's response to the eternal human question. Can we live together in peace? Since it's so easy to be caught in self-centeredness, we need to be very alert as we indulge our anger or cultivate resentment or jealousy. In this way, we develop tremendous patience, both with others and ourselves, as we open the heart of great compassion and begin to manifest harmony with all beings. I could stop here. I don't know about the timing, but I will go a little further in the personal inquiry. My mother, I have to bring her here. She was all the time saying to us, her children and her family, I am for harmony. Like that, grandiose. All what I want is harmony. And her way of doing that was not exactly the way we do that, or Shugen exposed that to us. Her way was to put everything under the rug. And as soon as a difficulty was throwing a little tantrum somewhere, discreet and all that, we stop here. We stop here, we don't go there. So we don't look at it. We do a little bit differently here. To that is that we are witnessing ourselves in our mind, our joys and our difficulties, and we are addressing them as soon as they come up. And I will talk. So my mother, bless her, because she held the thing, but we were raised in lying, covering up, showing a good face all the time. The kids in France, right? You have those long dinners, like lasting from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and the kids they have to stay at home around the table and all that. Then after that, I mean, they cannot show that they are bored. They cannot show this and that. And at the end, they have to be smiling to everyone and. Good night, kissing on each other. That's the way we were raised. And to break that kind of covering up and hiding and all that, it's kind of difficult. So, but as soon as I entered that path, things started to shift. And nothing like a session, which is a week long, sitting with everyone and looking and watching your mind go all week long, working and all that, a lot of things are coming up and you have to address them. And we cannot do but address them. We cannot avoid anything. And at the end of session, where a lot of people are, at the beginning, my first session, I was not so happy. I mean, I was happy it was done, but I was not so happy. I mean, I felt so raw. You know, I never knew how to pronounce raw. So R-R-W. And I felt so seen by everyone that all what I wanted to do was to hide, really. But I could not. And then again, and I'm sure that I'm stepping ahead of my notes and all that. But there again, that's the Sangha more established, more all that, who came to the rescue without, you know, oh, how are you feeling, my poor darling? You had a tough week or what? Not that way, but with a lot of compassion and a lot of, I mean, remember Eho, Hogan's wife, who at the time was doing session and all that, and catching up with me, and I was, you know, I was a little shaky after all that. And she said, "Yeah, I know. The first session, we are very vulnerable," and I felt exactly vulnerable. But at the same time, what the Sangha and people helped me to do is to be vulnerable, to accept that from myself. To accept to be weak, to accept to have seen everything, and say it's not all the time very pretty what we see inside ourselves, and but to be okay with it, you know, to be okay with it, and that without, I mean, how possibly could I see all that without the Sangha? I mean, here that's, I mean, this is flagrant. that comes to you, you know, and you just, I mean, like at the end, how can you but not be grateful, full of gratitude for all what people allow you to be? You can be yourself. While I thought during all that time, during session, that I was the only one having problems, that I was the only one fucked up. I have to say it that way. That everybody else was just settled and all that, doing the right thing and all that. And I mean, all what I did not allow myself to be as I was, suddenly was permitted. And without Sangha, I could never, ever have known that. That being said, I don't know where I go. So that's my experience. Now, Sangha is not only, I mean, here we are all practicing together Zazen, and we are all doing the same thing. We are all chanting the same chants, and all that. But it's much more to it than that. Obviously, we are studying all together. We, in our Sangha, we are respecting the Ango period of training, 90 days of intensive training. We are all doing that together. Shugen Roshi all the time says at the beginning of Ango, when we present Ango and the theme of Ango and all that, is all the time saying, we are like in a big ship. And we are all getting to navigate for 90 days. And at the end, he says, bon voyage, bon voyage, as he says. So it's much more than just practicing here like that on Sunday. You know that it is practicing also during the day. We do the Ango. We are studying texts together. We are working together. We learn very much how to work together in session, because there you are not only a lot of time on your cushion, but you have also work practice, rest practice, dharma talks and things like that. So it's a lot of things that we are all the time doing as a unit, as a sangha together. Let's never forget the togetherness of the sangha. Joshin yesterday was leading a half day seat here. And after a very tumultuous week, we all went, I mean, I don't know, as Americans, in a kind of roller coaster last week for different reason and all that. And it was hard to settle down, hard to find the still point, if we were by ourselves. And Joshin was introducing the day of sitting, saying how much struggle she had to concentrate after that week for multiple reasons, and I will not go there. But just when we feel unsettled, just to come and have the Sangha, because you support the Sangha and the Sangha is supporting you. I mean, this is a tremendous support, a tremendous exchange, which will not come by ourselves. And after sitting for three hours with the Sangha, just suddenly, everything was possible. Everything was possible. Miyotai, I forgot. I jumped her. Oh no, it's here. She still says it. Alone, I am what I am. But in community, I have the chance to become everything that I can be. And the more and more and more I hear that, I mean, everything that I can be. And everything is bottomless, spacious, it's everything. It has no beginning, it has no end, it is everything. So that's a treasure. That's the treasure, the Sangha. It really deserves its treasureness. We have to make up words, right? I had a lot of speech. It's very funny when you write your talk, you write in a certain formal way. And if I was reading it, that really will sound awful, I think. So I jump a little bit on the thing there. But if I slack in my practice, that's what I wrote. If I slack in my practice, if I become lazy, if I have the shadow of a doubt, I can say it. I remember to take refuge in the Sangha so I can recharge and restore. So that's that, this is that power. This is that treasureness of it. I have no time here, and I don't want to go overboard, and I don't want to bore you either. So maybe, what time is it? 12:20, perfect, right? We can... So the teachings happen when we are working together also. The teachings don't happen only when you are face-to-face with a teacher or when a teacher is giving a talk, which is a teaching, right? This is not a teaching. This is just a witnessing of what the Sangha is for me and could be for you. But that's my experience. So the teachings very often happen in working together in silence very often. And I had been volunteering for the Sangha for a long time. I started with Miyotai, cleaning the shoes there, going to the bathroom. You know, I started like that. She was asking for volunteering. The temple all the time needs hands and heart, obviously, but hands also linked to that. And I had been doing the books. Now I am relieved from that by blessing of by the office managers. I don't know if it is your title now, but it could be. Cooking, you know, all the time people need to eat. Residents are working outside and are eating here. Don't have all the time to cook for that. So cooks are all the time welcome. Call the manager. I'm coming to cook on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and all that. So it's a whole sangha endeavor, and you learn how to work in community and you work in harmony, right? Because that's the honorable for its harmony. So let's all do that. So I said I was coming a lot to do that. I'm coming less for different reasons now. My age also is a factor in all that. And but I was able to give this talk to you today. That's my offering for what it's worth. And I know that when I come here on Sunday or another day, I cultivate, you know, I mean, we are aware, we are all the time, right? And some people say, I'm practicing all the time. I'm practicing. Yeah, I mean, I like to say that Zen practice is all the time in my making, right? And more that way. But nevertheless, very often, you know, the awareness is not there. The mindfulness is not exactly there. So you come back. Sure, you return. You go back. You are witnessing that and you come back. But usually, I mean, for me, the transformation is obvious. If I spend the whole morning with you, with us, with you, when I come out, right, suddenly the sangha is larger. The world become a sangha, right? And I know that I am much more able at that moment when I step out to be aware of sentient being, to be closer to my vows, because we all the time end up with the four vows. And it's suddenly it's in me and it's ready to be offered. So how precious is the Sangha?
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.